Let's talk with author Paul Lockhart about his new book, The Drillmaster of Valley Forge, The Baron de Steuben and the Making of the American Army. We'll go back to Valley Forge during the Revolutionary War. Paul, how you doing?
Oh, just fine. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Beautiful book. This is, you know, for anybody who loves American history or military history, this is the book to buy. This is it's a lot of fun. It really is. So tell us first, who's Baron de Steuben?
Well, he's really the man who, in so many ways, helps to reorganize and retrain the Continental Army and along European lines and make it, in so many ways, capable of victory over the British and the American Revolution. And that's really the way in which he's entered into revolutionary legend, and especially the legend of Valley Forge. He still is at least a major supporting character in most histories of the Revolution, but that's really the only way in which anybody knows him as this drillmaster of Valley Forge. But there's a great deal more to him than that, really, and not only in the history of the Revolution, but also in the context of the history of the American Army.
If I'm not mistaken, this is the first book about Baron de Steuben since the 30s, right?
Yeah. John McCauley Palmer wrote a biography of him in 1937, and then there have been a couple juvenile biographies of him since then, but that's it.
So what is it that you unearthed, perhaps, in this 21st century version that the guy missed in the 1930s?
Well, Palmer's book actually wasn't half bad at all, but there was a certain amount of whitewashing, I think, and a certain amount of I think Palmer really fell in love with the character a bit too much. But the things that I was really interested, first of all, were in the way that Steuben brought European military traditions to the United States, and second, understanding Steuben's character, which was extraordinarily complex. Actually, he appears in revolutionary legend almost as kind of a caricature, almost two-dimensional and flat. This aristocratic German, perhaps baron, who appears at Valley Forge and quickly becomes popular not only because of his retraining, but also because of his theatrics, his constant profanity when training, when drilling the soldiers, and so forth. Those were the things I was really especially interested in. And finally, also what his significance was in terms of American military institutions right after the war and for some time to come.
We're talking with Paul Lockhart, a professor of history at Wright State University in Ohio, where he teaches European and military history. The new book is The Drillmaster of Valley Forge. So, Paul, take us to Valley Forge. Give us some context. Where are we in time in terms of the war, and tell us what it was really like.
Well, when Steuben arrived, when he arrived in this country, which was actually December of 1777, the encampment was already well underway. He actually arrived in Valley Forge in February of 1778 after first meeting with dignitaries in Boston, and then in York, Pennsylvania, where Congress was meeting. And at that time, Valley Forge was both imposing and a bit sad, I guess. It's very, very large. At least around 10,000 soldiers were encamped there. It was the remnants of the Continental Army, or Washington's main body of the Continental Army, making it, if you add the women and children who were present there too, the third largest city in America at the time.
Wow.
Very, very heavily defended too, probably the best defended city in America at the time. And although in some ways it was very well organized, the huts, around 1,000 of them at that point, were already established, and the fortifications had already been built. In other ways, it was clearly lacking, and primarily in terms of material requirements for the men, clothing and food in particular. Sometimes the weather is brought up as being something that made Valley Forge especially miserable, but it really was not that horrible a winter in terms of weather. It was nothing compared to two winters later at Morristown, New Jersey, where the weather was truly horrible. It was the lack of clothing and the lack of food that made it especially dispiriting. And this, on top of the fact that the American Army had suffered, at least Washington's army had suffered, some major defeats in the fall of 1777. Even though one of the biggest victories the Continentals ever won, the battles of Saratoga in the fall of 77, did a great deal to improve morale, Washington's army had suffered a series of defeats around Philadelphia before losing Philadelphia to the British in that fall. So the army is in terrible shape physically. It's in terrible shape in terms of morale.
Are they broke? Is that it? They just don't have money?
Well, there's that. There's simply the administrative blunders, poorly run quartermaster department to commissary to supply the men with clothing, with food. Local farmers were very often not terribly cooperative and were oftentimes more willing to sell what provisions they had to the British, who at least paid in gold, where the Continentals could not. And so it's largely a matter of local shortages and poorly organized administration. So the army is in bad shape, and Steuben has a great deal to do with bringing them out of that. I mean,
that's the scene that Steuben walks into. Then is when he first gets to America, he heads to Valley Forge.
Yes,
to find
yes.
General Washington.
Yes,
we're talking with Paul Lockhart, historian. The new book is The Drill Master of Valley Forge: The True Story of Baron de Steuben. Is it safe to is it being hyperbolic to say that Steuben sort of walked into Valley Forge and saved the day?
That's perhaps a little bit hyperbolic. Because
I don't want to be hyperbolic, Paul.
Major role in it. granted, you have to give credit to a large number of people, including, for example, Nathaniel Greene, who would end up being one of Washington's leading generals, and at this point was just starting to take over as quartermaster general and did a great deal to supply the army's material needs. But when Steuben comes in, he does a number of things. I mean, first of all, he has no rank at this point. Of course, he had substantial experience in Europe in the Prussian army during the Seven Years' War. His credentials have been somewhat exaggerated for him by Benjamin Franklin, the Silas Deane, before coming over to make him more attractive to Congress. But Congress at this point wasn't handing out commissions to foreign officers very readily, where they had been before, and much to their chagrin, found that many of the foreign officers they commissioned were not especially valuable. So when Steuben comes over, he's greeted warmly by dignitaries in Boston, by John Hancock, by Sam Adams. He quickly makes friends out of virtually everybody he meets in York, where Congress is meeting. But nonetheless, he still is nothing more than a volunteer aide to Washington. When he meets Washington in February of 78, Washington gave him a kind of a stiff reception, but not so much out of suspicion. Of what Washington was actually very—he knew of Steuben by reputation. After all, his reputation is although perhaps somewhat inflated as an officer in the Prussian army who had served under the great warrior King Frederick the Great had preceded him. But certainly, he filled a major gap in Washington's staff when he shows up at Valley Forge. Was Washington realized the absolute necessity of training the troops and instilling some kind of military discipline that seemed to be all but absent? Really.
Did that relationship between the two men warm over the years?
Oh, it warmed very quickly. In fact, it could run hot and cold occasionally, and it's partially because of Steuben's own personality. Very early on, Washington allowed Steuben to practically free reign over the camp in terms of inspections. And Steuben, you know, with a very highly trained eye, with a great deal of experience in staff work in the Prussian army, poked his nose pretty much everywhere, examining not only the troops at drill, at work, but checking out hospitals and talking with the men and finding about their relationships with their officers. Virtually everything was of interest to him, and he wrote a number of detailed memoranda to Washington about what should be improved in the army. And Washington immediately saw that he could be of great use, especially in the area of instilling discipline and training the army. And that's where Steuben steps in, early that spring, starts his training program of the army. So he quickly makes himself invaluable to Washington. It really is kind of a minor miracle that he pulls off in the late winter and spring of 1778.
And then from those, looking forward then, from that point on, could you really see his effects in the Continental Army?
Oh, very much so. In fact, very, very quickly. While the army is still encamped at Valley Forge, for example, Lafayette led a sortie out of Valley Forge towards Philadelphia and ended up getting practically trounced by a much superior British force at a place called Barron Hill. And just the fact that Lafayette was able to extricate himself as quickly as he did, and all the accounts of the battle show, I guess you wouldn't really call it a battle, it's not much of one, but they show how quickly the Americans were able to change formation and retreat in good order, which is something they clearly couldn't have done before very well. The effect of the drill and the training was evident there, and it's evident too at the probably the biggest major one of the biggest major pitch battles of the war, which happens right after the Army breaks camp at Valley Forge at Monmouth in New Jersey in June of 78, where although the Army, the Continentals, do suffer from a bungled initial attack, they quickly recover, and it's the discipline and the training is evident, and you see it throughout the war too, at Yorktown, for example, and that's part not only because of what Steuben did at Valley Forge, but in large part because of the Office of Inspector General that he basically created within the Army and his continuing work at this. You know, Steuben really wanted to be a field commander. I mean, he really yearned to command troops in the field. He loved battle. Having considerable experience with this in Europe, and he was somewhat disappointed in that regard. He only had a few opportunities really to lead troops in battle, most notably during the Virginia campaign from late 1780 to the summer of 1781.
So what happened to him? Where'd he end up?
Oh, the last part of his life actually is really kind of sad. He was never really remunerated as much as he believed Congress had promised him, or as much as he believed he deserved.
Him and the rest of the troops.
Pardon?
Him and the rest of the troops.
And the rest of the troops. Oh, yeah. Yes, yes.
Very few were paid, actually.
Yeah, yeah. He served as Inspector General to the Army through the bitter end until the Army was completely demobilized. He had been hoping all along to go back to Europe. He really came to the United States not so much because he believed specifically in the American cause, although he did like the notion of democratic government. He really thought of it as a career boost that would get him back on track in a military career in Europe. And he had hoped throughout the war that there was a commission waiting for him in the French army. So as soon as the war was over, he would go back there. But it didn't work out that way. And over time, he really grew to love Americans and America, although he had some problems with the way that American government functioned. And so after the war, he continued for the remaining 11 years of his life after the war was over, he continued to act as kind of a public citizen. And he frequently offered his opinion about the structure, the optimal structure of the peacetime military establishment for the United States, for the training of officers, including what amounted to being the first curriculum for the military academy at West Point. And was very, very, very actively engaged in social life in New York City. But he also was terribly poor, not only because he wasn't being reimbursed the way that he should have been, but also because he was simply no good at managing his money. As one of his aides put it, he'll forever be eating the calf in the cow's belly. He could not manage his own money, and he got involved in one fantastical get-rich-quick scheme after another, most of them involving real estate speculation. But he ended up keeping one of the grants of land that was offered to him by individual states, in this case, New York State, 16,000-acre plot of wilderness near the present-day city of Rome, and tried to turn that into a thriving agricultural concern, but it didn't work very well.
Historian Paul Lockhart, the new book is The Drill Master of Valley Forge, The Baron de Steuben and the Making of the American Army. And his fingerprints are still all over the Army, right? I mean, even to this day.
Oh, yeah, in so many ways. I mean, he wrote, of course, the first official regulation to the Army, the so-called Blue Book, published in 1779. And although in detail, I mean, the drill and the tactics there, of course, became outdated over time and were replaced during the War of 1812. But in so many other ways, the notion, for example, of a United States Army where there were, during peacetime, a small professional force that could be supplemented in wartime by a volunteer or militia force. The notion of the military academy at West Point training officers to fill positions in the Army when it was necessary to prepare for war. The whole notion of the relationship between officers and men, which he thought was of fundamental importance, that officers should treat their men with love and concern and not just with discipline, that they should look out for the material well-being of their men and they should share their privations.
Historian Paul Lockhart of Wright State University in Ohio, his new book is The Drill Master of Valley Forge. Paul, thank you so much. It's a great book.
Well, thank you so much for having me.